This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:05. It's great to have you with us for the Tuesday edition of the Noon Business Hour. I'm Cisco Cotto.
And I'm Chris Kreidel. A very nice forecast today, mostly sunny with a high temperature of 47. It's 40 degrees right now at O'Hare and 39 at the lakefront.
The Noon Business Hour is presented by the Village of Bedford Park. Let's kick things off with an update on Wall Street. At Bloomberg, here's Elisa Parenti.
Cisco and Chris, an improvement certainly over yesterday's numbers. The Dow is higher by 308 points, or 1.3%. So we're at 23,900. NASDAQ gaining 1.3%, or 90 points, and the S&P on the advance by 23. The Bloomberg WBBM Chicago Index also higher by 1%. We did see big losses to start the week, and investors are anxious to hear from the Fed tomorrow. Oil prices are once again plunging, crude futures down almost 5%, near $47.50 a barrel. Housing starts were expected to drop in November from October's numbers. Instead, they rose more than 3%, and the number of building permits, which is a sign of future activity, up 5%. The central bank has convened that last policy meeting of the year. Most Fed watchers are expecting a hike in interest rates this round. Investors will be looking for any indications about what policy will look like next year. Back to you, Cisco and Chris.
Thanks, Elisa. On today's Noon Business Hour, in our conversation, one thing is, why are the markets positive after being so negative yesterday? And why are we hearing the word recession over and over?
Yeah. Travel Tuesday, how to maximize those airline miles, especially around the holidays. And Amazon says it has a new device. It's trying to get a patent for it. It's involving facial recognition, even your scent, and privacy advocates are worried. We'll tell you all about that and loads more on today's Noon Business Hour.
An hour of financial planning each weekday. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
The first deal involving a major drug maker and a marijuana producer has been announced. We're going to be covering that in our next segment right now. Federal Reserve has begun a two-day meeting on interest rates, while the report on housing starts leads today's data as well. We welcome Joel Naroff, president of Naroff Economic Advisors in Holland, Pennsylvania. Welcome back to the Noon Business Hour, Joel. Tell us about the importance of what the Fed may or may not do today, and what do you think it'll do?
Well, when they give their statement tomorrow and determine whether or not they thought it was necessary to raise rates, I don't think it's so much what they do is what they say. I still think that they're going to raise rates another 0.25% tomorrow, but I think they'll indicate that they're more willing to watch and wait and see how economic factors develop over the course of next year before they make any decisions on when or if they raise rates again. And I think the market is looking for something like that. I think there's a disconnect. The problems with the market really isn't the Fed raising rates too much. It's the fears of trade war. But the markets are still looking to the Fed to try and bail it out because of the issues on what's going to happen to economic growth.
Why do the markets sell when the Fed rate increases?
Well, they don't necessarily have to sell off if the Fed raises interest rates. They really haven't been during much of what we call the normalization of rate process that's been going on. I think what's happening right now is the fear that, one, we could wind up in a real serious trade war with China. And if that happens, then, you know, all bets are off, all forecasts are out the door, and I think the world is in for a real rough time as far as growth is concerned. What they're concerned about is that if there is some sort of battles, raising rates in addition to those trade war issues will cause potentially the economy to go into a recession. Without the trade war concerns, I don't think the markets would be overly worried about another one, two, or even three Fed rate hikes.
Are we at a point where if the Fed doesn't do that, has the Fed sort of boxed itself into a corner where if it doesn't continue raising rates one, two, three more times, then that may solidify in some people's minds that there really is some significant economic trouble on the horizon?
I think that's a distinct possibility. There's been so much talk about the potential for a recession, and a lot of economists, and myself included, for the first time in a decade, have put negative numbers into their forecasts. I'm more toward the middle of 2020, but I think that's not an unusual expectation. We're indicating that, after 10 years of growth, things are going to slow down, and the sugar high is going to wear off, and there are other problems that are emerging, and we've got to be aware that an economic slowdown is coming, despite the tax cuts, despite all the government spending issues. So the Fed, if they don't do anything tomorrow, could raise real warning signs that it's fearful that this slowdown could be greater than expected and could come sooner than expected. And so I think that's one of the reasons why they will raise rates. The other reason is very simply the economy is in good shape. Inflation's where the Fed wants it, and there's every reason to raise rates right now.
Now, you say long-term you see a slowdown happening. Is there anything, realizing there's a lot of things that can happen, is there anything that might change your mind on that, something on the horizon, some data point that may make you say, hey, maybe this increase in the economy, this good news is going to continue?
Well, I don't think that we're going to have a recession anytime in the next year. I think we get through 2019 with moderate growth, which is not bad. I think what happened is that we've imposed some political thinking into economic reality. The administration's been claiming we could get 3% growth for as far as the eye could see, and most economists feel that 2 to 2.25% growth would be just fine, and it would be sustainable, and we don't have any problems. So when we see growth drop below 3% to 2.5 or 2%, people panic. Economists don't panic, but I think the public is getting concerned. So we're going to have a slowdown. The problem you have is because we got the economy hyped by some special factors, including the tax cuts, what do we do to sustain that growth? And right now there's nothing on the horizon that tells me that we can sustain that growth. And so that's where the worries come from.
Yeah. Do you recall any time when a president was having a conversation or actually an argument with the head of the Fed, as we're watching right now with President Trump?
Well, I think presidents have had comments to make, but they've usually backed off very, very quickly. They've been told by usually their Treasury secretaries that the one thing you don't want to do is get into a fight with the Fed chair, because then you force the Fed chair to do exactly what you don't want that person to do. Otherwise, they send the signal that the president can control the Fed, that the Fed has become politicized, and nobody believes what they say anymore. So getting into this protracted fight is probably self-defeating. If there was any chance that the Fed would not do something at this current meeting, I think it went out the door when we had the constant fights on it. I think the Fed is much more worried about the economic data and the reality of the economy rather than what the president is saying the Fed should do.
Joel Naroff, president of Naroff Economic Advisors. Always appreciate you being with us. Up next, Big Pharma sinks its teeth into medical marijuana.
The best daily deal in Chicago, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Canadian medical marijuana producer Tilray has inked a global supply and distribution agreement with pharmaceutical giant Novartis. Joining us on the International Autos Orland Park business line, Christine Oram, a reporter with Bloomberg based in Toronto. Christine, give us the nuts and bolts here of what's going on in this deal. How are they working together?
Yeah, this is the first for the industry, the first time a big cannabis company has partnered with an international pharmaceutical company. We've seen tobacco and alcohol partner with cannabis companies, but not pharma at this kind of global scale yet. So basically, Tilray and Sandoz, that's a division of the Swiss drug giant Novartis, are going to work together on boosting the availability of medical marijuana globally in any jurisdiction where it's legal. So they're saying they're going to work together to commercialize medical marijuana offerings, to co-brand certain products, develop new products, work together on research and development, work together on educating pharmacists and physicians about the benefits of medical marijuana. And the CEO of Tilray says the co-branding is one of the key things here because it will boost the credibility of Tilray products to have that Sandoz name stamped on them as well.
And is this, it's obviously new, but is this a greater acknowledgement by the bigger pharmaceutical companies that medical marijuana, at least, is here to stay? I mean, it's a part of life now.
Yes, absolutely. Tilray and Sandoz Canada had been working together in the Canadian market. They've been doing that since March, so coming up on a year now. Sandoz had been kind of dabbling in medical marijuana before this, but this is an acknowledgement that it's really becoming legitimized globally, that we're seeing so many countries that a year ago you would not have expected to look at legalization, countries like the UK, South Korea, Thailand, Malaysia, all moving in that direction. And so it's an acknowledgement by Big Pharma, and I'm sure you'll see other companies follow suit, that this is a trend that isn't going away, and also that there are potentially real medical benefits to be found here, although that research is still underway and, you know, to TBD in a sense.
What about social marijuana? Is that getting any kind of pat on the shoulders there, or what's going on with that?
Well, that's certainly picking up steam as well and gaining legitimacy in many markets, too. You've seen that in the U.S. with the number of states that have legalized, you know, most recently New Jersey, New York now talking about legalizing recreational marijuana. From pharma's perspective, though, I think, you know, it's safer, first of all, to stick to medical marijuana because that's what they know and that's what they do best. There's also less controversy around the idea of medical marijuana than there is around people who are just smoking it to get high. And so from their perspective, this is a nice way to enter the market, do what they're familiar with, stick to sales and marketing in markets they know well, and also, giving Tilray that boost of having leveraging their scale in markets like Europe, for example, and Latin America, where they already have a presence.
You're still getting a sense that there's a lot of uncertainty as this is a new emerging market, and who's going to be the winner, who's going to be the loser, because investors are obviously trying to figure out where to go, but it seems uncertain.
Yes, absolutely. And you can see that really reflected in Tilray's stock price. The shares hit a high of $300 on September 19th. Today, they're back down to, I believe, the $70 range.
Yeah, mid-70s, yeah.
Yes, they've been on quite a roller coaster ride, and that kind of reflects the investor, you know, the initial investor enthusiasm around this sector, but now the growing uncertainty about who exactly is going to emerge, as you say, as the winners and losers. And it's still probably a little bit too early to determine that, although some Canadian companies, Canopy Growth springs to mind because of their large partnership with Constellation Brands, the maker of Corona beer, also Kronos Group, which announced a partnership a couple of weeks ago with Altria, the big tobacco company. The cash infusion that these companies are getting from those partnerships is definitely giving them a boost over their peers.
Well, thanks for all the information. Christine Oram is reporter for Bloomberg in Toronto. Still ahead in Travel Tuesday, ways to use airline miles on things other than flights.
WBBM News Time 12:25. Check of the markets from Bloomberg, sponsored by Kaler Luggage. Here's Elisa Parenti.
Cisco, the Dow is up 258 points or 1%, NASDAQ gaining 82, a gain of 1.25%, S&P higher by 19 points, the Wintrust WBBM Chicago Index from Bloomberg gaining almost 1%. Big losses for crude oil futures. They're tanking down 5% to $47.50 a barrel. Now let's turn to Pete Manhart at Bates Commodities in Normal. Pete?
We have higher corn and bean prices. Rumors that China is again ready to buy beans, helping push them higher. We have the Jan beans up 4 at 908 and 3 quarters. New crop November up 3 at 956 and a half. Corn for March up 1 at 385 with new crop December up 3 quarters. July wheat down 4 at 543 and 3 quarters. Mixed prices here at noon. And this is Pete Manhart at Bates Commodities in Normal.
Thank you, Pete. I'm Elisa Parenti, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
WBBM News Time, 1230. Good afternoon. I'm Cisco Cotto.
I'm Chris Kreidel. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM.
Stocks are higher while oil dips below $50 a barrel. We'll see what's moving the markets.
Travel Tuesday. Airline miles can be valuable. We'll help you get the most out of them.
Amazon's high-tech effort to thwart package thieves is drawing concerns over privacy issues.
The Chicago police say two officers who were killed when they were struck by a commuter train last night never saw that train coming.
The judge in the Michael Flynn case delays sentencing until March as the former national security advisor continues to cooperate with investigators in the Russia probe.
Wall Street, the Dow up 232, the NASDAQ up 71, S&P 500 up by 15.
Beautiful sunshine all day long as we head to a high of 47 degrees. Right now, 37 at O'Hare, 41 along the lakefront. The Noon Business Hour is presented by the Village of Bedford Park.
Oil sinks to a 15-month low. Let's find out what's going on here with Patrick DeHaan, Senior Petroleum Analyst at GasBuddy.com here in Chicago. What's up, Pat?
Yeah, Chris, this is a continued sell-off. A lot of economic jitters. Obviously, headwinds persist in regards to economic growth. I was just reading housing starts are, looking okay, but at a price point that's way out of reach. So a lot of what we're seeing here in the oil patch is continued weakness on fears of not only the escalating trade battle with China, but what that might do here on our home turf with the possible slowdown in the economy coming. You talk about interest rates. There's just a lot of cloudiness on the horizon.
So there's kind of a worry level that you can see in the oil sector when things are getting kind of hot.
Yeah, absolutely. And certainly there are demand concerns on the oil side as well. There's a lot of weakness. And though OPEC has cut oil production, we're still talking about ample supply. The U.S., Saudis, and Russia continue breakneck pace, producing some 33 million barrels a day. We continue to see oil inventories build, according to the EIA as well. So there's a lot of bears out there right now in the oil patch. And it looks like we're a little bit oversold, but, it's been such a streak that it does not look good if you're a bull in the oil patch right now.
So what is rough for oil companies is not necessarily bad for consumers, right? I mean, we've seen some pretty decent gas prices in Chicagoland.
Yeah, that's right. Some of the lows that we've seen in quite some time, going back over a year, in fact, looking at the metro area. Just a couple weeks ago, we saw prices make a lower move well under $2, but stations in Orland Park throughout the area, we're at about six stations in Chicagoland under $2 a gallon, but expect that number to grow. The wholesale price of gasoline is now 14 cents a gallon under where it was just a few days ago. That's going to open the door for some of those sub-$2 prices in the suburbs to return. So if you need to fill your tank, at least at this point, I would hold off.
Well, thank you for the information and the advice. Patrick DeHaan, Senior Petroleum Analyst at GasBuddy.com here in Chicago.
Markets are gaining ground today, but oil does continue falling, as we were discussing with Patrick. It's down in the $47 range, now down nearly 5%. Michael Palumbo is joining us, manager of the TMT Perseverance Fund, author of the book Calculated Risk. Mike, we want to get to the markets in general in a moment, but when it comes to oil, as we see these prices, any advice to investors on what to do in a market in which it seems like oil's down a tick just about every day?
Well, good afternoon, Cisco and Chris, and I know that oil is definitely a leading indicator on overall global activity. So when you see it dropping like it has, it is definitely an indication that there are some bad, dark clouds forming over the overall global economy. And you rarely have oil prices dipping down into the 40s without some decreased demand. And that demand could be driven by just a slowdown in overall business activity across the globe. So it's definitely something we consider when we're looking at the overall macro picture of the economy here in the United States and in the world. So it's definitely, not a good sign. It's one of many data points we look at, but certainly oil, when you look at it alone, it is definitely signaling that we are in a slowdown.
And is it difficult to, if someone says, boy, these prices are going down, maybe now's the time for me to put some money into that sector somewhere. Is it difficult to know exactly where to put some money? Because it's not like everyone is involved in pulling the oil out of the ground. I mean, you have all different types of companies involved in it.
Certainly, you can play it a bunch of different ways. You can go with the drillers or you can go with the producers. You know, it depends on what you think will benefit the most. I mean, actually, you can also play it by buying the airlines if you think that this oil drop is going to hold, because, you know, you look at companies that use oil as, you know, as that's their main expense, this actually is helping them. So, you know, it depends on what your overall view on what oil is going to do in the foreseeable future. Certainly at these levels, I think your last guest said that they appear a little bit oversold. I would have to agree with that, but it, you know, just because they're a little bit oversold doesn't mean it can go down a little bit further. And like I said, there is definitely a problem with global demand overall. And there's a chance we're going into a recession. I don't think we are. And, you know, I think this is a slowdown that has taken the S&P off its highs for good reason, but that we remain in a trading range here between 2,500 and 3,000. And if that is the case, then this is a fairly good buying opportunity in stocks because we're near that low end. But you do have a lot of very bright people that are taking the other side of that, saying that we are going into a bear market and that this sell-off is going to continue. So, you know, I would just caution investors that, you know, you can have a little bit of these growth stocks on, like an Nvidia and Apple. Those are stocks we like, some emerging markets, but I would definitely temper that with some less risky stocks like utilities and high dividend paying stocks, because you want to be diversified in a situation like this in case, you know, your overall feelings end up not playing out. I think we're in a very, you know, it's going to be a volatile period coming forward. And so I would just caution investors to be diversified.
All right. And if, in fact, you see a recession coming, we want to hear that from you, too. So down the road, thanks for spending a few minutes with us today. Michael Palumbo, manager of the TMT Perseverance Fund, author of the book Calculated Risk here in Chicago. Up next, Travel Tuesday, maximizing the value of airline points.
A deposit for your future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Travel Tuesday, sponsored by Kaler Luggage. This afternoon, we're focusing on the best use of airline points. We're joined by Ted Rossman, industry analyst at creditcards.com. So, Ted, are we talking about the best way to use these for travel or other ways? Give us kind of a heads up on when we say the best way to use these airline points. What are we talking about?
Good afternoon. And it could be both. Now, typically, you're going to get the best value if you redeem for travel. So if you really know what you're doing and you're willing to jump through a few hoops, maybe transfer to your credit card's airline partner or hotel partner, typically with travel, if you do it right, you can get maybe 2 or 3 cents per mile. Now, if you redeem for something like cash back, 1 cent per mile is more the benchmark. And then if you redeem for other things like magazines or merchandise, you're typically going to get less than 1 cent per mile there.
One of the things that I've actually seen pop up quite a bit online is these experiences that airlines are offering. You can sort of bid on these experiences. What is that? Talk about that.
Yeah, there's actually an interesting one of local interest here coming up with the Winter Classic on January 1st at Notre Dame involving the Blackhawks and the Bruins. So Starwood Hotels on their credit card, they have a deal here where you can bid. The current bid is about 42,000 points, which equates to about $400. And you can bid to get tickets to the hockey game. You can get some behind-the-scenes access, a stadium tour, pictures down on the field, access to the partner skate and the New Year's Eve party the day before. This is the kind of thing where it's a one-of-a-kind experience. So if you want to just get the cheapest tickets and sit in the nosebleeds, you could probably save money on StubHub or a site like that. But if you really value this expanded access, that's actually a pretty cheap redemption.
Do you have to haggle a little bit, or is it an easy process to go through this and to come out with something?
This particular thing is an auction, so they're just going to have one winner, but there's other ones. A lot of times it's open to more than just one winner. Chase, for instance, has a deal with the Sundance Film Festival where you can sign up and exchange your points for a wide variety of meet and greets and different events at Sundance. A lot of times these card issuers do it with celebrity chefs as well. You might get to go to a special tasting or food and wine festival. So there's definitely values to be had if you like those experiences.
What's the best deal that you've seen?
Yeah, I think that things like exchanging 10,000 points for a suite at a basketball or a hockey game, that can be one of the more attractive redemptions if you like experiences. When it comes to travel, though, there's really no beating first class. I know people who've been able to get $8,000 airline tickets for free just because of their points and miles. So that's where it really helps to have transferable points, whether it's with Chase or Amex or Citi, and then you have a lot of different buckets you can transfer them into.
Now, I've seen about charities maybe benefiting from miles. Is there a benefit to people giving their miles to charity, especially as the end of the year comes up?
There could be. I think that probably the better value, though, both from a tax deductibility standpoint as well as giving the charity maximum value, is probably just to redeem for cash and then give them the cash instead. But there are some times that it might make sense to give miles. Like American Airlines has this great program for families of fallen service members called the Snowball Express, and they get them together for, you know, some fun and camaraderie, and they help fly people in based on the miles that people donate. So that's one that I like.
Ted, thanks for all the great information. Ted Rossman, industry analyst at creditcards.com in New York. Join us at this time tomorrow for Personal Finance Wednesday. Still to come, Amazon looks to stop porch pirates, but it could include a price of privacy.
Loaning useful information each weekday. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Amazon wants to use biometrics such as facial recognition technology to try to prevent the theft of customers' packages, but there are some concerns about such use. We're joined by International Auto's Orland Park Business Line by Paul Hockman, who's president of Humongous Media, former tech editor for the Today Show in Cambridge. Paul, welcome back to the Noon Business Hour. What's the conflict here? What's the possible problem?
Well, the big problem really depends on your perspective. Let's start with Amazon's perspective. Amazon's got a big problem that cost them about $250 million in stolen packages. 26 million Americans get their packages stolen every year, based on a recent survey. So that's an enormous cost. Amazon has to replace it if it doesn't show up. The customer has the right to say, hey, listen, I didn't get it. And Amazon has to spend money, lots of it, and all sorts of other logistical challenges to get a new product to the customer. So that's one side. The other side, that Amazon's trying to protect itself and ostensibly its customers by using facial recognition software in the Ring video doorbells that are out there to identify what they call suspicious people near the customer's front door. So it's privacy versus profit, basically.
So who says what suspicious is? Do I look suspicious, and why do you think that?
Well, I don't know, and I'm not going to say it on the air, but but I mean, I think I'm probably pretty suspicious too. In other words, I mean, I'm being light about it, but that's a great question, and I think that's literally the crux of it. Is somebody behaving suspiciously is hopefully the standard, but what does that mean? If somebody comes up and they've been promised access to your house because they're a guest, and they start looking around in what might be called suspicious by machine learning or some, you know, this particular software, and lo and behold, that is sent to, say, a law enforcement group. Well, now this suspicious person, you, for example, now have their face, maybe their fingerprints and other things sent to law enforcement. That doesn't seem fair. And that's what really concerns civil rights activists.
The one that was fascinating to me is scent recognition, that it would actually figure out your unique smell.
By the way, in addition to being suspicious, I also happen to be smelly. So so I don't know. I mean, again, that's exactly right. It does pick up this particular patent application includes not just being able to, you know, facial recognition, but also scent, as you pointed out, plus fingerprinting. So there are all kinds of things that are suddenly being collected by this future technology, I should say, that are really causing a lot of people some alarm.
Now, the idea, though, that you'd like to protect against package theft, it really is a big deal as we get more and more things shipped to the house. You get millions of packages stolen every year.
Let's just say if it's 26 million Americans having packages stolen, and you just literally, just for easy math, multiply times, say, $10 value per package, that's obviously an enormous loss. So again, it's profit versus privacy. And I think that the Amazons of the world, the shippers of the world, have the right to try and protect what they do. But there is a less invasive way to do this. Amazon has given customers the option to get to a locker, like at Whole Foods, for example, has lots of Amazon lockers where you can, with a code that they send you, you can unlock that locker and get your package safely there. So it's not as if this is the only way to deliver packages, but right now, this is the challenge that both sides are facing.
Yeah, wasn't the other option letting Amazon walk into your house? If facial recognition freaks you out, just let Amazon walk right in the house.
Well, by the way, you know, there are a lot of people who, yes, that's an existing option. You can grant a delivery person the right to open your front door with a code, a one-time code, to put the package inside. And there are some people who just don't consider that to be invasive, and other people who do. So it's all very much a personal preference. But the point is, there are options. This is ostensibly a new one that Amazon's applied for, and we'll hold our fire before we really see how it works. But yes, it's offering a lot of people some concern.
Well, we learn stuff every day, don't we, Cisco?
Yeah.
Paul, thanks for joining us. Paul Hochman, president of Humongous Media, former tech editor for the Today Show, based in Cambridge, Massachusetts.
WBBM News Time, 12:55, wrapping up the noon business hour with a check of Wall Street. At Bloomberg, here's Elisa Parenti.
We are headed higher. The Dow up 169 points, NASDAQ gaining 47, S&P up 8. The Wintrust WBBM Chicago Index from Bloomberg higher by 0.5%, so not quite the gains we saw earlier, but we're still in the green. General Electric is suing a Chicago software company over what it calls a ruthless scheme to steal employees and trade secrets. Uptake Technology says GE is resorting to litigation to distract from its own outdated technology. Uptake was founded by Groupon's founders. It produces software for industrial equipment. With business at 25 and 55, live from Bloomberg, Elisa Parenti, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
WBBM and HD Chicago, WCFS FM and HD1 Elmwood Park, Chicago.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.